The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Glad you can be with us on this Thursday afternoon. I cannot believe what I was just hearing in the news from Jay Inslee. The data daddy has no data. They are just making stuff up when it comes to the schools. And we are now telling kids, kids are dying. Head of the CDC says that more kids are dying from overdoses and suicides than would ever die. Just the increase in overdoses and suicides. That number is much higher than any number of kids who would ever die from COVID-19. And as we are locking the kids in the house, telling them to sit in front of a screen, no extracurriculars. Do you know how many kids' scholastic lives have been saved by extracurriculars, whether it be sports or band or drama, hip-hop? We have a great hip-hop team at Shorecrest High School. Won a bunch of national titles. But it saves lives having these other activities. And we are cutting our kids into oblivion. I cannot believe what I'm hearing from our governor. And I can't believe the sheep who are just, without any data to support it, are just... I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But first, the man who wants to defeat Jay Inslee and be your next governor. Let's get right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, if you were listening a few days ago, I gave my election picks and I said that I voted for Lauren Culp for governor. I like people who are constitutionalists. I like people who are non-politicians getting into politics. I think that we do have a swamp, and I would like it if somebody who's not a career politician has some life experience in the private world, knows what it's all about. And so now he is going to face off against Jay Inslee for governor and Republic Police Chief Lauren Culp, your Republican gubernatorial candidate in the general election, joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Lauren, I appreciate you coming on with me today.
Good morning, Dory. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So let's start with how improbable this is, because to be a police chief in a tiny town, in a tiny county tucked up in northeastern Washington, and to become the Republican nominee, that's not easy to do. So explain to me how that happened.
Well, you're right, Dory. It's not easy to do. I've been campaigning for about a year now. Well, over a year. Started in July of 2019. But the Lauren Culp story starts far before that. You know, I was in the United States Army in 1980 and 1984, served under President Ronald Reagan. I was a sergeant in the Army. I went through drill sergeant school, trained civilians to be soldiers. After my military, Barb and I moved our young family to the Olympia area where I learned the trades. I learned how to frame houses and do concrete foundations and driveways. And in 1988, I started my own business in construction right out of Olympia, started it from nothing, built that up to having multiple crews and vehicles doing jobs all around Puget Sound. And I ran that business for over 20 years and realized my childhood dream in 2010 at the age of 49, became a police officer in Republic. This is where I went to high school. This is where I met Barb. Been married 43 years, by the way. Our anniversary was yesterday.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Yes, sir. And so I took this job as a police officer to realize my childhood dream. I've been a police officer for 10 years, and that includes the narcotics detective for 3 and the chief of police for the last 4. So
okay,
my experience.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but as you describe that, Lauren, sounds like you have a good life. It sounds like you have a real good life and that you're living what sounds to be the American dream. So why in the world do you want to get into the dirty, nasty, backstabbing world of politics at the very highest level in this state?
Well, if you would have asked me that before November of 2018, I would have told you I don't. no desire to be a politician at that time. But my stand for citizens' rights back in 2018 is what has led me down this path to being the Republican nominee for governor right now.
You know, meaning when the state citizens by initiative passed an unconstitutional gun law, right?
Right. When they restricted 18 to 21 year olds from buying a semi-automatic rifle or leaving their property with one if they already owned it, I stood up. That was a bridge too far for me. You know, because Article 1, Section 24 of the Washington State Constitution says that the right of the individual citizen to bear arms in defense of himself or the state shall not be impaired. You know, that's even more explicit than the Second Amendment. And I took an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution. And I felt it was my duty to stand up for the citizens that I serve. That got me on the national news. That got me motivated to write a book in December of 2019. I wrote American Cop. It became a number one bestseller. That led me to be invited around the state to Republican Party Lincoln Day dinners and sportsman shows, talking to citizens about our rights and responsibilities. And citizens started asking me to run for governor.
Okay, so that's the gun issue. One that is still going to be on everybody's plate going into not just November, but likely after Inauguration Day in January. We are in the midst of this coronavirus. And Jay Inslee, you had your victory rally Tuesday night in Leavenworth, and you and most of your supporters were not wearing masks. And Jay Inslee has immediately condemned you as putting the lives of your supporters and Washington State citizens at risk. He's going to keep pounding that message that you are willing to kill people by not wearing masks. What do you say to that?
Well, if we're trying to save lives, we should ban automobiles because 50,000 or more people every year die in automobile accidents. Less than 1% have died from the coronavirus. I'm all about public safety. It's just funny that he would bring that up and point the finger at me when he released 5,000 hardened criminals out of our state penitentiaries, and two of them have committed murder. And a lot of them are reoffending. So that's on the hands of Jay Inslee. And he wants to talk to me about allowing free citizens to come to my event and decide for themselves whether they're going to wear masks.
Well, that's laughable. I am still waiting for him to condemn the rioters and domestic terrorists that have been flooding our streets, many of them unmasked as well. He seems to be fine with that. He just doesn't like Republicans at a rally without masks.
Yeah, no, he was praising people rioting and protesting. He was praising them, but he's going to turn the tables and say that, you know, I want to kill grandma, which is absolutely ridiculous. This is the same governor who let all those prisoners out of prison, and he's the same governor who sent hundreds of thousands of dollars to Nigerian scammers, hundreds of millions of dollars to mm-hmm. Nigerian scammers, while Washington citizens are still waiting for their unemployment check.
Okay, so what will you do? What will you do about this coronavirus that's still raging if you were to become governor?
It's very simple. Very simple. Because there's a rule book that our government has to follow, right? It's called the Constitution of the State of Washington. And I don't know if Jay Inslee's ever read it. I know he doesn't regard it as something that he has to follow because he's making arbitrary rules based on what he feels and what he thinks daily. But the Constitution of the State of Washington is a rule book, and it will be the rule book that the government follows when I'm governor. And Article 1, Section 7 says that no citizen shall be disturbed in private affairs. And if you look at Article 1, Section 1, it says that the power is inherent in the people, and government's there to protect our rights. So our citizens' rights will be protected. I will have press conferences with medical professionals to explain to people what's going on, because this isn't the first virus we've had, right? We've had viruses come and go, swine flu, bird flu, Ebola, AIDS. And so when the next one comes around and I'm governor, that's what I will do. Explain to citizens what they should do to protect themselves, what might happen if we don't, make sure the supply chain is as open as possible for equipment that we need, and then let free individual citizens decide what's best for themselves, their family, and their business. Because making a blanket statement like Jay Inslee has done, deciding that big box stores and abortion clinics and marijuana shops can be open, but barbershops, churches, gun stores have to close. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The virus doesn't know where it can go into and where it can't. So allowing individual citizens to decide what's best for themselves and their business is the way that you govern free individual Americans. And okay. We are all Americans.
Look, we don't have a lot of time here. I want to get you on again. I'd like to have you on regularly. I want to hear more of your economic viewpoints as well. You know this is going to get brutal, right? The left is vicious right now. And especially in Seattle, King County, areas that don't have as much affinity for the gun rights thing that first drew you into this race. You know that this is going to get brutal and personal and vicious for you over the next couple of months. You ready for that?
Absolutely ready for that, Dory. They've already been coming at me hard, and I'm ready for it. I don't back down. I love a good challenge, and I have the rule of law and the Constitution and law and order to bring back to this state, and I look forward to the fight.
Okay, and law and order. Now, you talk about the Constitution, just real quick. What about all the people who are marching in the streets? And it often turns into riots. It often turns into domestic terrorism. But you, as a strict constitutionalist, I assume you wouldn't do anything about them marching because they're exercising their First Amendment rights. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a right to peaceably assemble, go to the church of our choice, and speak our mind. That's a guaranteed constitutional right. And I'm all for the protests. From what I saw with that video of Mr. Floyd, that officer killed him. And protesting that, absolutely, definitely. But when it turns violent, that's no longer a protest. And it's too bad that the radical left groups are taking over these peaceful protests and turning them into riots. But rioting is a crime, and that has to be dealt with. And I will deal with that as governor.
Yeah, rioters and arsonists have gotten a free pass thus far. All right, well, let's stay in touch. You announced your candidacy on my show, and now we'll just stay in touch between now and November. I'll give Governor Inslee a chance to come on as well. I hope he'll take me up on it, too. Lauren, I appreciate it. Congratulations, and look forward to the campaign ahead.
Thank you, Dory. We'll talk to you soon.
Lauren Culp wants to be your next governor. What do you think? Based on what you just heard, he's the guy I did vote for. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. He's not a politician. He's not a slickster, you know, which is tough because Jay Inslee, he knows how to play the game. But private sector experience, a contractor, you know, somebody who's done some good blue-collar work, I like that idea. So and I like him. I like him. So what do you think? Do you think he can beat Inslee? 98973. Do you think he has zero chance? I think he has minuscule chance because the Jay Inslee, King County, unions team is so powerful around here. All right, speaking of Jay Inslee, up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
I simply cannot believe what I'm hearing from our governor.
This pandemic will continue to grow unless something changes to the positive side in the state of Washington. If every school district brought all of their students back for in-person instruction today, I believe we would see a real meaningful and dangerous increase in COVID activity.
You believe we would see that? So Jay Inslee said at his press conference yesterday he wants all schools all online. He wants all extracurriculars canceled. Sports, drama, music, all canceled. And I'll repeat what I've said so many times. It is those extracurriculars that keep a lot of fringe kids in school. It is, do you think if you have a kid and the only reason he's in school is so he can play football or basketball because he loves that so much. And because of that, he keeps his grades up. You cancel sports, as the governor is saying. Do you think that kid is going to sit in front of a laptop for 6 hours a day and get a meaningful education? this is going to destroy a generation of children on the margins, on the fringes, who they talk about all the time when they raise our taxes, how they want to help the kids, you know, the pre-K, and we're going to do everything to help children who are falling through the cracks. You are taking a mallet and you are pounding them through the cracks with all of this nonsense, with no data to support it, Data Daddy. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Coming up next, a Dory Monson Show exclusive. Last Wednesday, there was a peaceful protest on Queen Anne. Everybody knows what happened to a resident there. He was beaten, laid out in the street, concussion, had to be taken to the hospital. He has not talked about that incident with anybody. Until now, we'll speak exclusively with that Queen Anne resident who got the beat down by the mob. And it's a story you must hear. It's coming up next from the Dory Monson Show. Well, if you're listening to my show last week, we told you the story of what too many still are billing as peaceful protests because they all too often devolve into violence. And that's exactly what happened last Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. A mob marching in a Queen Anne neighborhood. A man came out of his house just to take some pictures of who was walking by, and they put a pretty brutal beatdown on that Queen Anne resident. We're keeping his name out of it because they can be pretty brutal once they target somebody. So let me welcome the victim of that incident last Wednesday. Thanks for coming on with me. I appreciate that you reached out and wanted to share your story.
Thank you, Dory. I appreciate it. You have me.
Okay, and what was your motivation for getting hold of me and saying that you wanted people to hear more about what really transpired?
I think the motivation more than anything is after hearing a couple of news reports, I hadn't spoken to anyone about the incident. One of the things I need to set the record straight is the media reported this as me going out and confronting them, telling them to be quiet, get out of the neighborhood, along those lines. But specifically, it was like I confronted them. And I want to be clear, it's like I did not confront this group. I did not tell them to be quiet. I did not tell them to get out of our neighborhood. They didn't belong there. I did not engage or speak with anyone until they confronted me. So I think it's an important distinction because the current narrative is that I was like this angry resident coming out of my house. They woke me up at midnight or 11:30, and I was telling them to be quiet and get out of there. And that makes it seem as if like I was initiating conflict into a peaceful protest.
Yeah.
Which is not the case. I would characterize myself as curious and as a bystander.
And your motivation for going out was it more than curiosity? Were you gonna just take pictures of them as they were walking by? What were you doing?
Well, exactly what happened is like around 11:30 I was awakened with a loud noise, megaphones, very, very loud chanting. And in my mind, I was like, oh, it sounds like a protest. Started going back to sleep. But the protest wasn't moving on. And so I said, are they protesting someone specifically? So I got some clothes on to find out what was going on, like, because it wasn't moving. And so basically, by the time I got down there, they started moving on. So it's more of like a Macy's Day Parade type of situation where I think they stop for a while, chant, then move on to the next block, chant, and that type of thing. Okay. So I was out there already, and something going on. So I just walked down the street past the group to get ahead of them. They're in the road, blocking the road and everything. I walked past them, got ahead of them to take a couple of pictures of the size of the group, just so, you know, you get better perspective. So just take a few pictures basically, and probably was going to share it with my friends the next day.
Yeah. So you were doing exactly what they were doing. You were exercising First Amendment freedoms on a public street. You're just as free to take a picture as they are to march and scream. And so,
well, yeah, there's this loud group in my neighborhood, and that doesn't happen every night. And
they
have a political motivation. It's an event. Take a couple pictures of it, you know.
Okay. And so tell me about how they confronted you and why.
All right. Well, I think as I was walking along, so I said from back to front of the group, so the road is blocked off. with cars. These cars have numbers on them, police scanners. There's a medical team back there. They're pretty well organized. And so I walk past, so I'm observing all this, taking a few pictures, and I'm walking on the sidewalk. And one person, I think, kind of noticed me and started keying in on me, flashing flashlight in my face. What are you doing? What are you doing? And so I just kept on walking on. You know, I think I said, just taking pictures, kept walking on. And like I said, when I got to the front of the group, it's about 90 people. I looked back at them and took a picture from the sidewalk towards the road. And then more flashlights. I drew attention. Then people, and then as I was walking back, so going from the front of the group down to the back to like go home, that's when they started like confronting me, like coming up to me, well, who are you? What are you doing? Don't take pictures, flashing. And what really kind of like started really setting off, I guess you could say, a confrontation is I'm about 6'3", and I was like looking off to the right, talking to other people that are confronting me, and someone who is much shorter than me slipped in front of me deliberately. I could see it out of like quarter of my eyes, like more of a feeling, didn't see them, they're about way shorter than me. And I accidentally stepped on their foot, lost my balance and lunged forward and like kind of put my arm out to brace myself against them. And they're like, assault, you know? So that was, like I said, the initial confrontation. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I saw one video where one guy, he's standing right in front of you and he's got a flashlight right inches from your face, shining it in your eyes. And I see you just do what any of us would do. You reached up, you just grabbed the flashlight away that he had been shining in your eyes. Was that... Yeah. At some point in the chronology you were just describing?
Right. Well, shortly after that, after they did, I conned her in. I was like, this is not assault. It's an accident. I tripped over them. And then as I was, they said, well, get out of here. And so, okay, I am leaving. So I was trying to leave. And that same person kept on stepping in front of me, like blocking me. I go to the left, they're blocking me to the left. I go to the right, they're blocking me to the right. So they like, weren't letting me go. Eventually I slipped around them and kept going. But people were cutting me off and putting flashlights to my face. And so close that one of the people were like actually tapping the bridge of my nose with the flashlight. So I believe I paused and then I was like talking to someone else and they kept on putting the flashlight in my face. I grabbed it and threw it off to the side. I kind of set them off, moved on a little bit further. And then a secondary group came rushing over, a larger person put the flashlight in my face. It's like, let's see you do this to me, throw my flashlight away. I grabbed it and pushed it off to the side. And then that's right before the assault happened from behind.
And describe the assault.
Well, I would say, as like I said, is at this point, I was becoming more disoriented. More people coming at me, shouting and stuff like that. And it was mainly flashlights, lots of flashlights in my face. And I think maybe we saw one laser. I can't really remember. But just like mostly flashlights. And I think that was more of like the distraction. At that point, I'd been keeping people in front of me and off to the side so no one's getting behind me. But at that point, when they were doing that, someone kind of like slipped into my blind spot or came up behind me. I don't know. And they hit me in, I think, probably the back right side of my head. And then I fell down. And I think I got the concussion when I hit the ground. That's what happened.
Man, I mean, this is so scary to hear. I mean, here you are in, you know, what is usually a nice, peaceful, residential Queen Anne neighborhood. And all of a sudden you're laid out with a concussion for no reason at all. So what's your, given your experience with these groups, because everybody else in the media seems obsessed with calling them peaceful protesters, and that's what they were terming that march that night. Right. What is your experience and what's your view when you hear them called peaceful protesters?
Well, I mean, well, I guess like, if you look at it like this, if we just look at like what happened that night, a group of roughly 90 protesters came into my neighborhood, Queen Anne, on a Wednesday night at midnight, chanting, blaring megaphones, flashing flashlights into people's houses, into their windows, while families are inside sleeping in their homes. I mean, that's not a protest. You know, a protest is like going to City Hall, you know, the police station, whatever, holding signs or this. This group came into this neighborhood, you know, that's a mob. They're intimidating the people into silence and self-censorship. And ultimately, they attempted to intimidate with violence, you know?
Well, I mean, it's more than even that, though, because, you know, my wife and I have three girls who are grown now. But I can imagine if they were you know, 4, 5, 8 years old, and they experience something like that, there would be terror. And I believe that they are trying to inflict terror for all the reasons you just said, because they want to quell any dissent. They want to mandate groupthink. They will do it by any means necessary. And if that means giving you a concussion, then that's what they will do. And that's why I truly believe they are domestic terrorists. And stories like yours certainly illustrate that I'm speaking truth when I use that phrase.
Well, they had another behavior that clearly showed they knew the optics weren't good. One of the side stories to this is I was able to communicate through a selfie of me being dressed. They had a medical unit there, the group, and they were dressing my bloody head. And my girlfriend, you know, came to try to get to my aid. She said, I can't get there. She called me. She called me and while I was on the ground, and she said, I can't get you. The protesters are blocking the road. And she said, the police are with me. So she found some police, and they were there. She confirmed they were there because they'd heard there was an injury. Someone, I guess, maybe called it or something. I'm not sure. And she told them, he is at this cross section, and that's where he is. Go help him. And they said they couldn't go in. Said they were told they could not go in. And so there is a resident of the neighborhood that unfortunately some people have encouraged us to come into our neighborhood, laid on the ground, 90 people, and I'm putting a pool of blood, and there's no one really, you know, I could have been much more seriously injured. Eventually what happened is I think they looked at the optics of this, 90 on one, me laying on the ground, there's no police there, there's no conflict, there's no exposure. And my girlfriend said all of a sudden all these trucks and cars started pulling up quickly. They all jumped in and took off. And that's how they were able to get to me.
Unbelievable. What? Look, I'm so glad you reached out to me. I'm so glad you're sharing your story, because I don't think people are getting an accurate characterization from many in the media of what's really going on out there. And if a guy just trying to sleep at midnight can be given a concussion for simply walking out of his house and exercising a constitutional freedom, we should all be scared, because this is a mob that is trying to take us by force and mandate thought, mandate groupthink, and people need to know what's going on. And I think you have done that fantastically well by sharing your story with me.
Yeah, one final point, though. It's just that I think that there's a lot of people who want to do the right thing, but I really believe before they get behind any organization or these groups or these protests, I think they really should like investigate them a little closer and not listen to the slogans and chants, but find out what their motivations are. The information's out there, and I encourage people to do that before they invite them into our neighborhoods where our families are.
That is so wise. Such wise advice. All right. Thank you for coming on with me. Thanks for sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dory. Appreciate it.
A Queen Anne resident, we're keeping his name out because the domestic terrorists are terrorists, but he went to the hospital. They had to put 4 staples in his head. He had a concussion. The cops weren't allowed to come in because the domestic terrorists were blocking the road. And this is being visited upon neighborhoods in Snohomish County, where neighbors protected Carmen Best's house, to Queen Anne. I mean, if you thought this was going to stop at Capitol Hill and CHOP, they're coming for you. Okay, we have lots more still to come, including from the presidential race, Joe Biden. Somebody's got to do something, because he's just losing it every single day. The progression is becoming more and more obvious. We have the audio to prove it. That's coming up next. What a difference, man, this presidential race offers. I'm watching right now the president, Donald Trump. He's speaking at a Whirlpool factory in Clyde, Ohio, and they're talking about, and the market is going up as the president's speaking. So I don't know if he's speaking about some economic news, because I have it on mute, because I'm doing a radio show. But Joe Biden, on the other hand, remains in his basement, just prattling more and more nonsensically every day. He said he will not go to Milwaukee to accept the Democratic nomination at their truncated convention. But Joe Biden had the, I thought, the gaffe of the week yesterday when, you know, first of all, in early July, he said that he was being tested constantly for cognitive slippage.
Have you been tested for some degree of cognitive decline?
I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. Look.
Okay, I've been tested and I'm constantly tested. Yesterday, and this isn't incidental to the story, the race, a black CBS News reporter asked Trump the same question. And what Trump came back at this guy with was, to a lot of people, left on the left and the right, sounded very racist.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you say?
Are you a junkie? Did you take a test about using cocaine? To a black journalist, are you a junkie? But Kamala Harris said he was the most racist of all the Democrats during the debates. Okay, so let's fast forward to today. Joe Biden got even more bizarre. So here's the what. Well, first of all, let's get to the things that just the vast majority of Americans disagree with. He says that he will get tough on China, but the China plan that Biden's taking credit for, it actually was what Trump did. This is bizarre.
For example, when I was last there, he said to me, Xi, that, you know, they set up an air identification zone, that they had an international airspace that said that you had to check with China before you could fly through it. I said, we're not going to pay attention. He said, what do you want me to do? Take it down? I said, you should, but we're not going to pay attention. So we flew a B-1 bomber through it. Got to make it clear the international rules of the road in terms of airspace, sea space, and the way in which you deal with the trade and equity that have to be imposed.
And the thing he just described is something that Donald Trump did. But listening to him talk about China, you need an interpreter. But then here's where it got so bizarre and racist, just flat out racist again. He was asked if he would talk with Cuba if he's president. Listen to what Joe Biden, remember, if you don't vote for me, you're not black. Listen to what Joe Biden said about the African-American black community.
Are you going to re-engage with Cuba, though? I mean, I'm specifically wondering about, you know, the Florida
yes.
communities that are, you know,
yes.
incredibly interested in the Cuba issue and see
yes.
Status given to Venezuelans while Cubans are being deported.
The answer
so
is yes, I'm going to engage. Yes. Yes. And by the way, what you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community.
Wow. Latino community is diverse. The African-American community is not. Joe. Wow. That's 15's next.